I saw by the station clock that it was after 11. Setting out for the hotel on foot, I felt, as on other occasions, the resignation and relief that familiar places instill in us. The wide gate was open, the garden dark. In the lobby, faded mirrors repeated the plants of the main hall. Strangely, the owner did not recognize me, and he shoved the register forward. Taking up the pen, which was attached to the desk, I dipped it into the bronze inkwell, leaned over the open book, and experienced the first surprise of the several that that night would give me. My name, Jorge Luis Borges, was already there, and the ink was still fresh. "I thought you'd gone up already," the hotel keeper said. Then, staring, he corrected himself. "Excuse me, sir, the other man looks very much like you, but you're younger." "What room is he in?" I inquired. "He asked for room 19," the owner said. It was what I had feared. Dropping the pen, I made my way to the stairs and took them two at a time. Room 19, which was on the third floor, opened onto a poor, unused terrace, where there was a balustrade and, I recall, a sort of park bench. The room itself was the topmost one in the hotel. I opened the unlocked door. The chandelier was still lit. There, in the pitiless light, face up on the narrow iron bed, older, grown thin and very pale, I recognized myself, eyes lost on the plaster mouldings high on the wall. My voice came to me. It was not exactly mine, but the voice I always hear in recordings, unattractive and expressionless. "How strange," it was saying. "We are two, and we are the same. But nothing's strange in a dream." "Then all this is a dream?" I asked, taken aback. "It is. I'm certain of it. My last dream." With his hand, he indicated the empty vial on the marble-top night table. "Still, before you get to this night, you'll have a great deal of dreaming to do. What year are you in?" "I'm not quite sure," I said, utterly bewildered, "but yesterday I was 61. "When you come to this night, you'll be 84. Today is the 25th of August, 1983. "So many years to wait," I murmured. "Not for me. Nothing's left me now," he said curtly. "I may die at any moment. I may lose myself in the unknown and go on dreaming about my double, the overworked theme that Mirrors and Robert Louis Stevenson gave me." I felt that his evocation of Stevenson was a farewell, not just a piece of pedantry. I was this other man, and I understood. It only takes a dramatic moment to become Shakespeare and to hit upon a memorable phrase. To divert him, I said, "I knew this was going to happen to you. Years ago, in this very place, in one of the rooms downstairs, we began the rough draft of the story of this suicide." "Yes," he answered slowly, as if he were gathering memories. "But I don't see the connection. In that draft, I bought a one-way ticket to Adrugay, and as soon as I got to the Hotel Las Delicias, I went up to room 19, the most secluded room of all. There I committed suicide." "That's why I'm here," I said. "Here? This is where we always are. It's here at home on my Pooh Street that I'm dreaming you. I'm here dying in the room that was Mother's." "That was Mother's," I repeated, without trying to understand. "I'm dreaming you in room 19 on the third floor terrace of the hotel." "Who's dreaming whom? I know I'm dreaming you, but I don't know whether you're dreaming me. The hotel in Adrugay was torn down some years ago, now 20, maybe 30, I no longer remember." "I'm the dreamer," I answered with a certain challenge. "You don't see that the main thing is to determine whether only one man is dreaming and whether there are two, each dreaming the other. I'm Borges, who saw your name in the hotel register and came upstairs. No, I'm Borges, who's dying on my Pooh Street." There was a silence, after which the other man said, "Let's put this to a test of some kind. What's been the most terrible moment of our life?" I bent over him, and the two of us spoke for a while. I know that we both lied. A faint smile lit up his old face. I felt that in some way that smile reflected my own. "We have not lied," he said. because we feel we are two and not one. The truth is that we are two and we are one. The conversation was beginning to annoy me, and I told him so. And you, in 1983, I added, aren't you going to tell me anything about the intervening years? What can I say, my poor Borges? All the unhappiness you already know so well will be repeated. You will end up alone in this house. You will run your hands over the books, which will have no letters, over the miniature portrait of Swedenborg, over the wooden tray with a Swiss Federal Cross on it. Blindness is not darkness. It's a form of solitude. You will visit Iceland again. Iceland, Iceland of the seas. In Rome you will recite lines from Keats, whose name, like everyone else's, was written in water. I've never been to Rome. There are other things, too. You will write our best poem, which will be an elegy. On the death of... I said, not daring utter the name. No, she will outlive you. We fell into a long silence. You will write the book we both dreamed about for a long, long time, he went on. Around 1979, you will realize that your so-called work is little more than a series of drafts, of assorted drafts, and you will give in to the vain and superstitious temptation of writing your great book, the same superstition inflicted on us by Faust, by Salambo, and by Ulysses. Unbelievably, I filled page after page. And in the end, you knew that you had failed. Something worse. I knew it was a masterpiece, in the most oppressive sense of the word. My grand design never went beyond the opening page or two. The rest was all labyrinths, knives, a man who thinks he's a reflection that thinks it's real, the tiger of the night, battles that come back in one's blood, Juan Morania, blind and doomed, Macedonio Fernandez's voice, the ship made of the fingernails of the dead, evening spent reciting Old English. That museum is quite familiar, I remarked, not without irony. And also the feigned memories, the playing with symbols, the long enumerations, the working in of ordinary words, the imperfect symmetries which the critics unearth with glee, the not always apocryphal quotations. Did you publish that book? Without real conviction, I toyed with the melodramatic notion of destroying it, perhaps by burning it. I ended up publishing it in Madrid under a pseudonym. It was said to have been written by a clumsy imitator of Borges, who had the defect of not being Borges and of aping him superficially. That doesn't surprise me, I said. Every writer ends up being his own least intelligent disciple. The book was one of the roads that brought me to this night. As for the others, the humiliation of old age, the conviction of having already lived each day, I will not write that book, I said. You will write it. My words, which are now the present, will barely be the memory of a dream. His dogmatic tone disturbed me. No doubt it was the one I used in my classes. It disturbed me that we were so much alike, and that he was taking advantage of the impunity that the nearness of death gave him. Are you so sure that you're going to die? I said, to get even. Yes, he replied. I feel a kind of mellowness and relief that I've never felt before. I can't explain it. All words require a shared experience. Why does what I say seem to bother you so much? Because we are too alike. I hate your face, which is a caricature of mine. I hate your voice, which is a copy of mine. I hate your emotional prose, which is mine. So do I, said the other man. That's why I decided to take my own life. With a gesture, he called me to his side. His hand sought mine, and he said, the Stoics teach that we must not complain about life, that the prison door is open. That's what I always understood. But laziness and cowardice held me back. Then, some 12 days ago, I was giving a lecture in La Plata on the 6th book of the Aeneid. All at once, on scanning a certain hexameter, I saw my way. I made up my mind. From that moment on, I felt invulnerable. My fate will be yours. The sudden revelation will come to you in the midst of Latin, of Virgil, and by then you will have completely forgotten this strange prophetic conversation which is taking place at 2 times and in 2 places. When you dream all this again, you will be what I am now and you will be my dream. I will not forget it. I am going to write it all down tomorrow. It will remain at the back of your mind, somewhere beneath the flow of dreams. When you set it down, you will think you are weaving a fantastic tale. It will not be tomorrow. You have still many years to go. He stopped speaking, and I realized that he was dead. Somehow, I died with him. I bent over the pillow in bereavement, and there was no longer anyone there. I fled the room. Outside, there was no roof terrace or marble stairways. There was no quiet, spacious hotel or eucalyptus trees, no statues, no summer house, no fountains. Nor was there the grillwork gate to the grounds in the town of Adrogay. Outside, other dreams awaited me.